Welcome to the Natural Allergy Treatment Podcast. I'm your host, Jess, and joining me today is Jenny, our PAT expert naturopath based in Auckland, New Zealand. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Jess.
We're part of Health and Wellness Australia in Auckland, who are a team of naturopaths around Australia and New Zealand that specialise in a natural allergy treatment called Positive Association Technique, or PAT. So Australia and New Zealand have been devastated by flooding in recent years, and though the initial cleanup was heartbreaking to families who lost everything, it is the longer lasting problems from the water damage that are causing the most problems. So we're seeing this all too often in our clinics. So today we're going to be talking about the effects this mold exposure can have on our health and how to recover from mold exposure.
Yeah, so floodwaters and excess moisture are a breeding ground for mold, which can cause a range of allergic symptoms like irritation to the eyes, the skin, the nose and the throat, to the more serious reaction of asthma, and for some people, food intolerances. Even more concerningly, in some individuals, it can trigger deeper issues, which can cause a cascade of events in the body and debilitating symptoms. So, you know, after a flood, mold can begin to grow within 24 hours, especially if it's in humid climates like Queensland or Auckland. And then they release these spores, which contain mycotoxins that can cause allergic reactions and respiratory inflammation in people. So these spores are very small and light, so they can float around your house really easily. And if they land in an area that's damp, it will provide enough moisture and food, it can grow and form colonies.
So we've actually seen this firsthand in our clinics with so many people struggling with both mold allergies as well as an increase in these more serious issues. So what are the actual potential effects of mold exposure on our bodies and immune system?
Yeah, so if you don't get rid of all the mold, even if you think, you know, if you wipe it, if you don't get rid of all of it, it will continue to grow, and it can be a significant health risk to those living there, even if you're not allergic to it. So there was a statement and the medical effects of exposure to mold, and it describes mold as causing an adverse human health effects in three specific mechanisms. So the first one is a generation of harmful immune responses. So that's like an allergy or a hypersensitivity. There's direct infection by the organism itself, and that can be from the lungs or on the skin. And then there's a toxic irritant effects from the mold byproducts. So mold is actually a really big problem in Australia and New Zealand, and that's not just from flooding. Our old houses, and in New Zealand we have this thing called leaky buildings, which also has caused a massive problem with mold. And also some of these newer houses are not built with the proper ventilation or insulation that allows the mold to thrive. So for those people who are susceptible to the mycotoxins that they release, it can cause these long-term health problems like CIRS, which stands for Chronic Inflammatory Response Syndrome, SIBO, and leaky gut, mast cell activation syndrome, salicylate intolerance, and multiple chemical sensitivities. So there's a big range.
So let's start with the first one, Chronic Inflammatory Response Syndrome, or SIRS.
So this is called biotoxin illness or mold toxicity. So it's a body-wide inflammatory condition that affects multiple systems and creates multiple symptoms throughout the whole body. So this is caused by exposure to the biotoxins or the neurotoxins that are derived from the molds. So a paper published by the Center for Disease Control in America found that mold endotoxins and fungal glycans were detected in the environment after the Hurricane Katrina and Rita in New Orleans at concentrations that were previously been associated with health effects. So among the sources of biotoxins that can produce the CIRS, biotoxins grown from mold known to grow in the water damaged buildings account for up to 80% of the CIRS sickness. So if this CIRS is left untreated, it can become debilitating to patients, but it's also really hard to diagnose because it can mimic other chronic health conditions like chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, and multiple sclerosis.
So how do we go about getting a diagnosis of CIRS?
So the problem with CIRS is the biotoxins affect our immune system in such a way that it's difficult to find its presence. And that's because our immune system's got two main sections, the innate and the adaptive immune system. So we are born with the innate immune response, but we develop an adaptive immune system after birth. So the innate system acts sort of almost immediately to an infection. The adaptive is the second line of defense, so it takes longer to respond, but provides long-term immunity by creating an immunological memory after this initial exposure to specific pathogen or biotoxin. So in biotoxin illness, it's been found that people who have specific gene defects are the ones who get the sickest. And so the most common is this HLA gene, which one in four of the population has. So it's not really even that uncommon.
Yeah. So does that mean that some of us are more susceptible to developing SEERs?
Yeah, so they found that those that have the gene mutations or on a subset of genes, and it's HLA, DRBI, D2B1, DRB3, DRB4, and DRB5, and that these particular people, they found they have these gene mutations that are more likely to develop this inappropriate immune response, and they're susceptible to getting sick from being exposed to mold and other infections. So the more mutations you have, the bigger risk and the more susceptible you are to the CIRS. And so for the portion of people that the biotoxins lead up to this upregulation of this innate immune system, so the adaptive immune system can't see the biotoxins presented to them by the innate system, so they can't produce these antibodies to neutralize them. So the innate immune response knows that there's a foreign invader there, so it continues to create these inflammatory cytokines that lead to a chronic inflammation in multiple systems in the body. So bacterial and viral pathogens can be seen in the blood work, but because the biotoxins are really, really small and they're fat soluble molecules, they're capable of going from cell to cell through membranes without being carried directly in the bloodstream. So it makes it really difficult to find them. And these biotoxins position themselves on the inner fat soluble membrane of the cells, because they prefer the fatty, and actually they prefer the fatty tissue around the brain and the nervous system. So symptoms often occur in the brain, the cardiovascular system, and the gastrointestinal system.
So when it comes to testing, what are the options that are available?
Testing is helpful, but it's not perfect. But there are some testing methods to see what's going on. So you've got a urine mycotoxin testing, and this measures the levels of blood of mold metabolites in a urine sample, and so it tests for 11 different mycotoxins. There's an organic acid test, and that checks for 76 markers, providing information about abnormalities in the person's chemical pathways. It can also detect if mold, bacterial, or fungal overgrowth is an issue. There's a visual contrast testing, which measures some neurological functions, and it checks your ability to see details at low contrast levels. And there's a blood test, and that measures antibodies for mycotoxins. But there's also common symptoms, but they're often similar to other illnesses. So it's important to get a correct diagnosis from a qualified practitioner. This list is quite long, so I recommend going to the Surviving Mold website to see them all, and we'll put a link to that on the show notes.
Is one of the major indicators or symptoms the sudden development of allergies as well?
Yeah, so a major clue for CIRS is atopic presentation, which basically means that you're really reactive and sensitive to lots of things. The difference with CIRS is that your symptoms are somewhat constant, not just when you're exposed to triggers, because you're reacting to this internal mold mycotoxins being released. So this upregulation of the immune system can also result in the development of seemingly random sensitivities and intolerances. It's also common in severe eczema and asthma cases that aren't responding to the usual medications like antihistamines. And a way to distinguish between mold allergies and CIRS is that with a mold allergy symptoms, your symptoms should improve when you're not in direct contact with the mold. But with CIRS, your symptoms persist as you're still struggling to detoxify it, even when you've not had direct contact with it. And another interesting clue is feeling better on a gluten-free diet. So there's this link with the genes for non-celiac gluten sensitivity and the HLA genes that we spoke about earlier that make you more susceptible to the CIRS.
Is this wide variety of symptoms why SEERS is sometimes confused or mistaken for mast cell activation syndrome?
Yeah, so unfortunately it is possible to have both this chronic inflammatory response syndrome, the CIRS, as well as the mast cell activation syndrome, or the MAX. So it can be really hard to diagnose. And mold exposure causes your immune system to be on high alert at all times in an attempt to protect you from ongoing danger. So this actually causes inflammation and the excess release of histamine and other mediators that can trigger the MAX. So you can learn more about MAX in our other blog podcast episode, The Rise of Mast Cell Activation Syndrome.
And can mold exposure also affect our gut microbiome?
Yeah, so mold mycotoxins can disrupt the function of the migrating motor complex, or the MMC, by interfering with the chemical signaling that would activate the MMC. So MMC is responsible for sweeping the remaining bacteria and food particles from your small intestine towards the colon between meals. So a well-functioning MMC is crucial for preventing SIBO. So environmental mycotoxins, most often sourced from water-damaged buildings, are also commonly implicated in chronic mucosal disorders and gut dysfunction. So they've been found to directly damage the gut epithelial barrier by disrupting the junctional proteins and encouraging cell death. So this damage to the intestinal wall can cause a condition called leaky gut, which we've talked about, you know, in lots of other episodes. And that not only hinders nutrient absorption, but it also increases our susceptibility to developing sensitivities and food allergies and intolerances.
So you mentioned the development of food intolerances there, and there's one really common food intolerance that we see in our clinics. Could you explain the curious link between mold exposure and salicylate intolerance in particular?
Yeah, so mold illnesses can also trigger food intolerances, and the very common one is salicylates. And salicylates are naturally occurring food chemicals that are present in many of the foods that we eat. So they belong to the phenol family of plant compounds, and they're most common in brightly coloured fruit and vegetables. They're the plant's protection mechanism against predators, and so they're found in higher amounts in the skin. And for most people, it doesn't cause them any problems. But and also actually it's in pharmaceutical drugs. They have the synthetic version, and the most well known is actually aspirin. So
we have a full list of foods that contain salicylates in our free food chemical intolerance EPAC on our website. So I'll pop that in the show notes as well.
Right. Yeah. So when some people are exposed to mold, they can develop an intolerance to salicylate foods, especially if their gut health is compromised. And so the connection between mold toxicity and salicylates is that the body uses the same sulfation pathway to detoxify both substances. And that they also both use the antioxidant glutathione to help the body to do this. So if your body has been exposed to mold and its mycotoxins, it will use up a lot of your stores of glutathione to detoxify the mold, and there might not be enough for the salicylate detoxification as well. And to further the problem, salicylates are a potent depleter of glutathione, so it leaves less available for the body overall anyway. So, and also as we age glutathione, we make less of it. So, you know, that's why it can be more, we can be more reactive as we get older. So salicylate sensitivity symptoms usually occur after eating salicylate-rich foods, and also these fragrances that contain salicylates can be triggered also when inhaled. So signs and symptoms of salicylate reaction are wide-reaching, and they can affect pretty much every body system.
Yeah, so we did a full episode all about salicylate intolerance and the sulfation pathway, so I'll link that as well. And what's the link between mold exposure and multiple chemical sensitivity?
So multiple chemical sensitivity flare-ups can also happen from mold exposure, as molds produce these volatile organic compounds, which include aldehydes, alcohols, ketones, and hydrocarbons. So people who are sensitive to these VOCs may experience the max symptoms, including the dizziness, nausea, memory problems, breathing difficulties, flu-like symptoms, rashes, and hives. So, you know, as you can see, mold can be a real problem for all of us, but especially those who are immune compromised.
So now that we've covered some of the effects mold exposure can have on those of us who are vulnerable, we'll now move on to the steps for recovering from mold exposure.
Yeah, so recovering from the effects of mold exposure requires a holistic approach, especially when you're dealing with CIRS. So the priority is to remove or minimize your exposure to the mold. So if the mold is in your home or place of work and you're unable to leave quickly, here's some tips to kind of help reduce its spread. So unfortunately, it is really hard to eliminate molds once they've begun to grow, which is why it's recommended after flooding your home that you need to remove all of the porous material and throw it away. So that's clothing, couches, mattresses, carpet, rubber foam, paper, cloth products. And those non-porous products also need to be like completely professionally cleaned, because mold needs moisture, oxygen, and cellulose-based food to grow. So after the cleanup, your best defense to stop mold growing again is to reduce the humidity levels in your house and keep it as dry as you can. So you can do this with dehumidifiers, as they will reduce humidity levels and keep track of what your levels are. So The dehumidifiers need to be at about 45% to 55% to avoid any mold growth. And you'll need more than one because you'll need to sort of find what parts of the house are the most damp. And so most dehumidifiers have built-in humidistat to kind of give you the current relative humidity of that area. So this will kind of help you stop further growth, but you still have to find and eliminate these colonies that are present. And so all of the surfaces in the house that have had mold spores visible, they either need to be removed. So that means the jib particle or the jib or the particle board actually being taken off and like put new fresh in. Or you have to use appropriate surface cleaner to kill it. So bleach is commonly used, but it doesn't actually kill the mold. It basically bleaches it white, so it's hard to see. But it also, which doesn't obviously defeats the purpose because it'll still grow, but it also releases strong fumes, which can cause lung irritations and watery eyes and coughing as well. So it's definitely not a good option. There are non-toxic enzyme-based formulas that will kill the mold and the mildew, and those are free of ammonia and chlorine and are biodegradable. So, you know, for clothing materials that can fit in a washing machine, there are special laundry additives you can use that will remove the mold and the spores. And when you're cleaning up mold, you need to protect yourself by wearing goggles and gloves to avoid any contact with the mold. And if you use one of those KN95 style masks, that will avoid the inhalation of the spores, and keep the room cleaning when you're cleaning it well ventilated to avoid overexposure from cleaning chemicals and mold spores. And keeping areas well ventilated will also reduce that humidity, especially in the bathroom and laundry areas. And then use an exhaust fan or an open window when you're showering, and in the laundry or in your dryer should also be vented outside to an outside vent. So you can use the bags of desiccant to remove the damp from your wardrobes. But in wintertime, when the windows aren't open and there's much more condensation on the window frames, you need to well, – I've got like a car share at home, which is like a – it will suck up all the condensation that comes from on the windows, because if you can take it off the windows, it won't then drop and seep into the windowsill, because once it gets into the windowsill, it can get down into the wood and start rotting that.
Yeah. So once we're no longer being exposed to the mold, what does the detoxification process actually involve?
So it's best to work with a naturopath or another health professional who specializes in mold exposure. And it will take a holistic approach depending on how you've been individually affected. But in basic terms, it's about helping to support your body's detoxification pathways and to help to get rid of those mycotoxins out of your system, as well as reducing the overall inflammation in your body.
So we've actually got a little snippet from a naturopath we've worked closely with over the years named Brenda Rosenfeld, who specializes in this process. So we'll just cut to that snippet quickly now.
Hello, I'm Brenda, and I'm a naturopath, a nutritionist, a herbalist, a lecturer, and a mentor with over 20 years of clinical practice. I also spent 10 years working in intensive care as a registered nurse. When I'm working with somebody who is experiencing a biotoxin-related illness, such as SIRS or MCAS or some other biotoxin-related illness, I look at all aspects of the person's health. Our physical health, our psychological health, our emotional health, and our spiritual health are all parts of the picture. The illness that somebody presents with is more the symptom of an underlying imbalance that has been created in the body. And my work is to support my clients in working with correcting what is going on. For example, the inflammation that is occurring in the body. If we don't address the inflammation, we're not going to get good results anywhere. We also need to look at supporting the cellular fatigue and the cellular dehydration. The cells are very, very tired. They're very, very thirsty. And they can only take on a certain amount of information at any one time. I work slowly with the body and only utilizing or using low doses of particular herbal medicine, homeopathic, nutritional, bark flower, and other types of remedies. It takes time for a body to learn how to rebalance itself and how to start to work correctly again. We also need to support the gut, the liver, all the different systems of the body that are being affected, helping the body to bind the toxins that are running rampant throughout the body, supporting the symptoms that each person is experiencing. And each person's condition is experienced in a very unique way for them. Working with diet, working with lifestyle, all form a part of the treatment plan. What's very important though when I'm working with my clients is that they are in the driver's seat. In other words, we go at the pace that is right for them. If somebody can only make one small change, that is enough. We start with that and we build. It is very much a step-by-step process. It took time for the body to become so unwell. It will take time for the body to regain its health and balance. I look forward to supporting you as much as I can. And please reach out to me. You can visit my website and you are welcome to give me a call or send me an email.
All right, and we're back. So what I really love about Brenda's approach is that it's a very gentle approach, which can be great when you're in that really sensitive state. So Jenny, is this something someone should do before seeing us for positive association technique to address any of those remaining sensitivities?
Yeah, so this process should help reduce that overall reactivity and sensitivity. So then you'll have a clearer picture of what remaining reactions that you have and that weren't just a symptom of the actual mold toxicity. So it will help you get better relief and longevity of relief for your symptoms as the overall level of inflammation in your body will be greatly reduced. So therefore, your chances of redeveloping these reactions will also be lowered. But in saying that, we've worked with clients who've been unaware of the effects of mold in their home or workplace, what it's actually had on them, and they do respond well to PAT. So you just have to factor it in that it may still be an underlying factor that can contribute to your symptoms as well as causing sort of this ongoing development of new reactions.
So lastly, could you explain the PAT process for working with reactions to mold as well as other substances?
Sure. So we're all qualified naturopaths and we use a range, like a form of muscle testing or kinesiology to assess the reactions that you have to a wide range of food, airborne and chemical substances, as everyone's triggers are individual. So how muscle testing works is that you hold a sample vial of the substance and we're looking for a change in your muscle strength to indicate a reaction. So if the muscle in your arm stays strong, that allows shows that your body's okay with that. But if the muscle weakens, then it indicates a reaction to the substance. So we then use a chiropractic tool called an AcuStim to stimulate the nerve bundles and acupressure points on either side of the spine. So while you're holding on to that substance to help retrain your body to no longer have that negative reaction to the substance. So the mold treatment we do is actually one of our biggest ones that we have. Because we're going in and we're addressing each of the individual species, including molds that live in our sinuses, on our skin, as well as in damaged buildings. So we sometimes need to split it up to two or three sessions.
So if you're interested in learning more about positive association technique and seeing whether it is a right option for you, I'll pop a link to our previous episode called What is PAT in the show notes. And you can also visit our website, naturalallergytreatment.com.au, to get some more information. Otherwise, thanks so much for today, Jenny. It's been really interesting to learn about all the effects mold exposure can have on our bodies. And I think this will be a really like a light bulb moment for a lot of people who seem to develop their symptoms out of the blue. And you've already made a start on your next piece on migraines and amines.
Yeah, that is a really interesting one. It's quite detailed and big, but I'll try and make it understandable for everyone.
So we'll be sure to subscribe to our channel to check out some of our other episodes we mentioned and our new ones too. So I look forward to chatting to you then, Jenny.
Great. Thanks, Jess.
Take care.